As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to a new season of the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm joined today by Stuart Robson, Patty Barkley, and live from the England camp, Matt Hughes. Coming up on the show today, we'll be discussing the England squad, the Community Shield, and our brand spanking new feature, Off the Fence, which replaces the much beloved but now departed Quick Hits. Let's kick things off with everybody's favorite preseason friendly, the Community Shield, United beating Chelsea 3-1. To what degree does this game matter? Stuart?
I think it does matter. I mean, the pre-season is all about getting your players fit, but this is the first competitive game, and Manchester United wanted to play better than Chelsea. Chelsea wanted to play better than Manchester United, and if you look at the fans' response, they wanted their team to win, and I think it was it wasn't a low-key game. It started off with Chelsea trying to keep possession, but as the game wore on, and you see both sides want to win, the tempo increased, and it put players under more pressure than have been in any other pre-season game so far. So I think it does matter.
Patty?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good stepping stone to the season. I don't think it matters as much as a league match, any league match. But it's a good way to sort of get things started. And 84, I mean, yesterday's game has made us feel good about it. I mean, there have been Community Shield or before that Charity Shield games that don't, but it brought a semblance of a smile to the face of the game, and my word, that was needed.
One thing which I was curious about is, you know, for much of last season, we saw United playing in a 4-3-3 with Rooney as the lone striker, or say maybe for half of last season. On Saturday or Sunday, we saw a 4-4-2. Rooney and Owen started the game up front, and then it was Chicharito and Berbatov. But is this the way United are going to play this year? Do you see them more as a 4-4-2 side this year than a 4-3-3? Patty?
Yeah, I think they'll play 4-4-2 in some home games, in a lot of home games. When you need to sort of break down defences. I think big games, I don't think they'll be able to afford not to thicken the midfield by playing, you know, 4-5-1, 4-3-3, that thing, which gives you five in midfield if you want. Manchester United are one of those clubs that can change personnel and systems without apparent damage. Unlike the English national team, who showed you cannot do that at international level. I think Chicharito is going to be a tremendous new weapon for them, particularly in home games. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I think that playing 4-4-2 helped them yesterday with two up front, but Michael Owen cannot be one of those two players from his performance yesterday. I mean, he dropped off a little bit deeper. He didn't make any forward runs in behind the opposition. He wasn't alive when Rooney played the ball back across the box. He played the ball backwards and square all the time. But Chicharito, if he does play, he was the player that was looking to spin in behind the opposition as much as possible. And I think what they would do when they haven't got the ball, they would try and strengthen midfield by probably Wayne Rooney coming back and just playing on the holding midfield. Field player of the opposition.
Mm-hmm. Well, gee, but that's interesting. But what happened to all those people who talked about how Wayne Rooney has to play as a centre forward?
Well, they're talking rubbish, weren't they?
Yeah,
of course. Okay. Just talking rubbish.
Just checking. But what gets me about this is if they play 4-3-3, and I still sort of feel like it might be Sir Alex's preferred option. I was actually sort of playing the game which is a game you can play at home, by the way, where you sit and you count United central midfielders, and you look at this, right? And Okay, Darren Fletcher, fine, good, put him in there. But then you get into Michael Carrick, who last season was injured and was on the bench a lot.
Not a good defensive player.
You've got Paul Scholes, who turns 36 before Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Not a good defensive player.
Ryan Giggs, who turns 37 before Christmas.
Not a great defensive player.
You've got Owen Hargreaves, who's injured.
Very good defensive.
Yeah, very good.
But not now that he can't walk. You've got Anderson, who's had a terrible season last year and is injured. And then you've got Park Ji-sung, who I think started 10 games last season and is probably more of a winger, and Darren Gibson.
Defensive winger.
the defensive winger. And then you've got Darren Gibson. I mean, this is literally everybody we have, and I listed them all because you've got to find three of them who can play consistently midfield, which to me then makes the point, surely he's got to sign another midfielder, perhaps an attacking midfielder, perhaps Paddy's mate from Werder Bremen.
Well, it certainly could do with more creativity.
That's Mesut Ozil, by the way.
Mm. Yes, sorry. Yeah, I'm sure everybody knew that. But, they could do with more creativity, maybe borrow one from Arsenal, who've got arguably too much. But that's the way Manchester United play now, you know, the sort of tight three. Well, they're going to play different ways, but... Yeah, I mean, everybody could do with a Mesut. Talking about Mesut Ozil, I'm not sure. You have to build a team around him, and I don't think Ferguson plays that way. I don't think he'd be a good signing for Manchester United or probably any other Premier League club.
Well, it's interesting, Hughie. If we can digress to you for a minute there, you speak to a lot of agents. You cover transfers. Please riddle me this. If I'm Werder Bremen and in 12 months' time I lose Mesut Ozil for zero, why not sell him now, even for this cut price, 15 million? Wouldn't I be anxious to flog him since he won't re-sign a new contract?
It depends how you look at it. From a purely financial view, probably yes, but I think it's quite admirable when smaller clubs, if you can call Werder Bremen a smaller club, determined to hang on to assets while they can in the hope of having a good season on the pitch. We saw it last year with Chamakh at Bordeaux, who they probably should have sold him when they had a chance to Arsenal, but they didn't. Hung on, had a great season in France, and then he left for free. But you know, what price success on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, Werder Bremen are trying to qualify for the Champions League at the moment. You know, that's worth 15 million. Mm. So it would be a completely false economy. I agree with Hughie as well, just on the qualitative side of it. We've already said that Werder Bremen are set up to play this way. Ozil took the place of the Brazilian
Diego,
who played in exactly the same way, had the same assets. And
I think it all depends with Sir Alex Ferguson how the wingers play this season. If Valencia plays to the top of his ability and Nani plays to the top of his ability, he won't play with two up front. He'll have to play with one up front. And he'll play with a midfield player playing just behind them. And that's where Ozil could come into the reckoning. If Nani doesn't start playing particularly well, then he's got to change the system slightly because then he can play with two up front and play with just a four-man midfield, and Ji-sung Park or somebody like Giggs can then tuck in and make sure they're not outnumbered in that central midfield area.
But the guy's 22, 23 years old. I mean, 50. I mean, we all saw him at the World Cup. We saw him before. 15 million euros when, you know, you're spending 12 million euros on Chris Smalling. I mean, surely it's a no-brainer, right, Stuart? Or am I just insane?
Well, you want the best creative players in the world playing in the Premier League. If that's where you want to spend your money. It's easy to spend your money on midfield players and defence, but if you're going to spend big money, spend it on creative players. And Ozil is a creative player. He's the one that can unlock defences. That's why Paul Scholes was the best player on the field yesterday, because he unlocked defences.
I'm just worried, though, with English Premier League refereeing, whether he would survive the battering. You know,
do you think the Premier League now is allows players to get stuck in? I don't think it
question,
does.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think last year was the most brutal I've seen in the Premier League yet. Mm-hmm. I think that refereeing generally, as we saw from the World Cup, is getting more
I never put you down as a soft Scotsman.
Yes, well, do now. I'm a football lover, and I think that the game's in real danger from permissive refereeing. And I think the World Cup was a warning signal that nobody seems to... You know, we've spent several years concentrating on diving, which to me is an irrelevance, and ignoring a far worse form of cheating, which is intimidation and tactical fouling. And I just don't think the referees are picking up on it. And I think that Ozil would find... As Ronaldo often talked about it, and Ronaldo's is a big, strong lad, 6'1" and 12.5 stone, you know, and he used to complain about the treatment he got. Every creative player in England, and lots of the managers privately will tell you that they're worried about the refereeing in England, and have been for years.
Paddy, evidently not a fan of Holland in this past World Cup.
I think they were a disgrace. They should be banned from the next one.
Let's take a quick look at Chelsea now. I thought they actually started bright, but then they tailed off badly, and Carlo Ancelotti came out afterwards, and you know, he said this is their fourth consecutive defeat in preseason, for however much that matters. And he said, look, we had a lot of guys away at the World Cup, it's a preparation, we're tired, everything's going to be fine later. Is everything going to be fine later, Husey?
It'll be fine. Whether it'll be good enough to win the league is a different question. I think Carlo Ancelotti is more relaxed than most Chelsea fans, and for good reason. They're fortunate that their first five Premier League games are all very, very winnable. They start with West Brom, and then they play teams like Wigan and Stoke, I think. So for them, the season doesn't really start until late September, when you think the players would be fully fit, which they clearly aren't at the moment.
Well, Chelsea actually, I think, have the record signing, if and when it goes through, in the Premier League this summer, with the exception of Manchester City, and that's Ramirez. Mm. $22 million for the Brazilian. I want to get your thoughts on him. We all saw him at the World Cup. But first, I want to impose my thoughts on everybody, which is, I love this signing. I love this guy. He's humble. He runs his rear end off. He can play as a winger. He's got some quality. He's sort of like, I don't know, a cross between Florin Malouda and a more defensive player. I mean, he's got Malouda's intelligence in some ways. I think this is exactly what Chelsea needed, both in terms of age profile and in terms of positioning and what he can bring. Are you with me, Husey?
I was very impressed the game I saw him play for Brazil. Yeah, and he can, as you say, do several roles. He can play the SEM position. He can play wider. He's got a fantastic engine. I think the one caveat would be not many Brazilians have done well in England historically. So it's just all about what kind of character is. But I think he is very much, from what I've been told, in the sort of Gilberto Silva mold, is sort of very hard working, very honest, very industrious, and that is characteristics that you need to survive in the Premiership. And Gilberto Silva will probably be one of the most successful Brazilian imports we've ever had in terms of longevity.
Well, Ramirez, yeah, I think he will bring something to Chelsea, but I don't think that's Chelsea's problem. I've been saying for many years now, the weak link is John Terry. And he showed it again yesterday. Wayne Rooney runs in behind him. His positional play was poor. He looked unathletic, and he's looked unathletic for two or three years.
Isn't it funny the way that Ashley Cole got the blame for it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ashley Cole defended really poorly on the second goal, where he just let Valencia running behind him.
Terry says, "Oh, let him cross from there, no problem at all."
But when the ball was played over the top, Wayne Rooney had to make up 3 yards. Not only did he make the 3 yards up, he actually ended up getting a crossing with John Terry 5 yards away from him.
Yeah.
And Ivanovic didn't see the danger either. Ivanovic should have been recovering into the hole that Terry had been taken out of. And so he didn't do his job properly. Ashley Cole didn't track the runner either. But John Terry was at fault for many of the things that went wrong at Chelsea yesterday, and has been for a couple of years. And he gets away with it because he's loved by the Chelsea fans, and for a long period by the press as well.
Well, of course, that's pretty much over now. But Chelsea's defence, final thought. A guy who nobody's mentioned, and I'm hoping you can shed some light on this, Hughie, is the right back, Bosengwa. I kind of think that when he comes back, they'll have pace, they'll have width, they'll have the opportunity to maybe, you know, restructure the central defense because Ivanovic will be able to play there more regularly. Any news on if and when this guy's coming back, Hughie?
Yeah, he's back in training, and he should be fit in a couple of weeks, I think. I don't think he's going to be fit for the West Brom game, but he's expected to play a pretty full part this season, and I think it'll be a welcome return for them. They haven't been that busy in the transfer market, but Ancelotti's taking the view that Essien and Bosengwa are kind of new players for them, because the last 6 months of last season they just weren't available. So it does give them options, enables, as you say, Ivanovic to move inside, and with Alex, who's a decent player, if Terry isn't fit, then it'll be fascinating to see whether this, you know, self-styled leader and legend is actually dropped by his club if he's not playing.
Well, there you go. We discussed the Chelsea defence, and we don't even mention Ricky Carvalho. Guess what? The World Cup ended, less than a month ago? But international football is back. It's England and Hungary. Lots of interesting talking points on this one. But let's start out with something, the timing of this. Because, you know, we had Arsene Wenger complain about this. We had Harry Redknapp complain about this. We had the folks on Sky complain about this. Is any of this justified? Should the people be complaining about the timing of this international friendly? Paddy?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's obviously something to do. I'm just trying to work out who in the world wants to play at this time. But there obviously must be someone, hence it's in the international calendar. But I think, you know, you do have an option not to play. I think England, for footballing reasons, would be much better off doing work behind closed doors this week. So that I wouldn't have to go and watch them. It is quite ludicrous. And I mean, as you know, there are teams, for example, Liverpool, you can only feel sympathy, really. Liverpool have got the first league game followed immediately by, European action. And yet the manager hasn't had the players. I mean, it's an insult to the game. It's an insult to the playing spectators.
I'm just going to throw this out there because I imagine I'll be in the minority of one here. The European Championship qualifiers start on September 2nd. This is the only free Wednesday that they have because yes. August 18th and August 25th, there's going to be Champions League third round qualifiers. Mm. I mean, would you rather they went into qualifying without having ever had any kind of training camp or any kind of option to assess the players?
Yes, I would, because yes. I think the players don't particularly want this. They're trying to get back to fitness. This isn't the right time to play the game. I feel sorry for the managers of clubs. How you prepare your pre-season training now with so many international players away from you?
Yes.
I just don't know how when I was coaching, I used to prepare all the pre-season. You say, well, this, we're going to work on our system, we're going to work on our patterns of play, we're going to work on our defending, and this is the sort of the setup we're going to have. Well, you can't do that these days. All you're doing is sort of getting the general fitness of the players up. There's no game plan that you can put into place because the players aren't there to do it.
International friendlies simply aren't. I wouldn't have any international friendlies at all. I mean, they're just an excuse. They're a waste of time. You learn nothing from them. You chuck a kid on, he plays brilliantly against a tiring, unfamiliar team in 20 minutes, and suddenly there's you feel you have to pick him for the next
match. And it also gives false hope to England. You know, we saw a lot of games prior to World Cup where England win games pretty poorly, but everyone said, we're okay. You know, we've beaten Mexico 3-1, we've beaten those 2-1. We can win the World Cup here. And it doesn't actually tell you too much about the state
of
English
at
football.
All. Look, I just think it's wrong, and it gives managers things that they go through the motions, they play about as many players as they possibly can, and satisfy nobody. I think the game would be much better off without them. Why should you have rehearsals?
I've got to say, when I was involved in the England setup at youth level, under 21s, or the first team on a few occasions, it was the one thing I didn't look forward to. Mm. I didn't want to go away from the club on a Sunday night. You should get to the training camp. You should train for 3 or 4 days. You didn't really want to be there because you were injured maybe from the Saturday, or you were carrying knocks from the Saturday game.
Yeah.
You couldn't give your full in training. It was you came back straight into training with your club, and by the time Saturday game, you were shattered for the Saturday game.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if we have to play this. Surely to goodness, Capello, with all his experience, can work out what Laurent Blanc has worked out. Don't pick World Cup players.
No.
What on earth is Gerrard doing out there? What on earth is Rooney doing out there? What on earth is, you know, blah, blah, Terry doing?
Could have used it as an experimental...
He could have used it as a way of bringing in players. What's the point of playing Rodwell, who's a real prospect, a genuine prospect, in an under-21 friendly against Uzbekistan? I mean, this manager, this is the worst England manager I think I've ever experienced, this guy. I think he's hopeless.
Hughie,
For once, I'm actually on your team on this game. I think I find it hugely ironic that when England crash out of the World Cup, there's a sort of wailing in your teeth about how the Premier League clubs have too much power and how the international game isn't taken seriously enough in this country and we don't produce enough players. And then as soon as we want to have a game, everyone remembers about it and says, oh, I feel sorry for the clubs. There are people who want this game. Fabio Capello clearly thinks it has some value to get his players together. 60,000 people are willing to pay to watch it. So there clearly is demand, and I think it's kind of indicative of the strength of football versus international football in this country that we're all moaning about it.
Yeah, but I mean,
and I don't even support England.
Ferguson, nor do I. But I mean, so Ferguson only wants Rooney to. But he was quite blatant about it. He said, "Yeah, it's quite useful to have Rooney playing. He needs another game under his belt."
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I mean, that's the enthusiasm with which the game is encompassing it.
But I might, first of all, thanks to Hughie for supporting me. He's obviously a very wise man.
Well, we knew that.
But I want to throw something else out, which, I mean, I personally don't attach any importance to the result of the game or even really the performance of the game. But I think what's important from the England coaching staff perspective is what they see in training in these 2 or 3 days. Then they go and pay they have to go and actually play the game because they have to make some money to pay off Wembley. But what matters here is what they learn in training. What matters here is that Fabio Capello gets to spend time with Wilshere and Kieran Gibbs and some of these new guys and see and learn from training sessions. Is that not important, Stuart?
You learn more about the players in training than you sometimes do in the games. But these players have been with the England setup, whether it be the first team, under 21, that's surely what the the relationship between Stuart Pearce at under 21 level and Fabio Capello is, that anybody that's been in the under 21 squad, Stuart Pearce should know all about them. Fabio Capello should know all about them anyway.
So. But he doesn't get to work with them in training. There's a difference between, you know, knowing about somebody. I mean, I know a lot about John O'Shea because I've seen him play, but I've never actually trained with him or worked with him, right? I mean, isn't there value there?
Yeah, I suppose there is a bit of value. Well, there's quite a lot of value, but whether it should be in this particular period of time, I'm not so sure. You know, I look at Jack Wilshere. He's played in every pre-season game for Arsenal. He started in central midfield, and he's probably shattered before the season even starts. And now he's going to have to go and produce his best and play really. Because when you come in as a second string player or a young player, you've got to perform in that very first game that you play. Otherwise, you may not get another chance.
I want to add something else. Hughes, you get your view on this. Capello's apology a few days ago. I was sort of taught when I was a little kid that, like, if you try your best, you don't really ever need to apologize for anything. Obviously, Capello wasn't taught the same thing or feels differently. Did we need this apology?
I think there needed to be an acknowledgement that things went badly wrong and England didn't do as well as they should have done, and that the management and the players were all culpable in that. And I think it was a sensible thing to do PR-wise as much as anything else. For me, I don't think it really went far enough, not in terms of the apology, but there wasn't an acknowledgement of specifics and things he actually got wrong. And I don't think you'll get that from Capello, because very stubborn.
Capello shouldn't be apologising for is the fact that England don't win the World Cup isn't down to the manager. It's down to we haven't produced good enough players over the last 40 years to get anywhere near winning a World Cup. Even under Bobby Robson, when they got to the 1990 final, it wasn't a particularly good team. If you went through the games, England played poorly in most of the qualifying games. They didn't play well until they played against Germany in the semi-final. That's the only game they actually played well in. They were outplayed by Cameroon. They were outplayed by Belgium. They were outplayed by the Republic of Ireland. So England haven't produced players for 40 years.
Egypt?
They just about won against Egypt with a Mark Wright header. But England haven't produced players. We've moaned about Fabio Capello. We've moaned about Sven-Göran Eriksson. We've moaned about Steve McClaren. We've moaned about many other managers. The players aren't good enough to win World Cups at the moment.
Well, Paddy, you just said this was the worst England manager in history, right? Mm. So Stewart instead blames the players.
No, blames the development of the players.
The development of the players.
Yeah, player development's not good, but I mean...
Is that the fault of the worst England manager in history?
No, of course it's not. But I mean, the point is that less well-endowed countries than England still perform well in international tournaments. If you go back to, the Swedish team that got to the World Cup in 1994, two quite more or less, world-ranked players, Tern and Schwartz and people like that. Hussein maybe was around
but
at
they
that
always,
time.
But what they
but
did
they,
have...
they played for the others were people like Pontus Karmark and so on, who made up the numbers at Leicester. But they all played for the shirt. And as Greece proved as well in 2004 in Portugal, if you play for the shirt, you can compete with anyone.
But what most
and
of the countries you've mentioned have had a system of play that their soccer federation has said, this is the way we see a vision of the way we play football. Mm. England have never had a vision of how they want to play football. So they go,
no,
they don't have a philosophy or a vision, so they go into tournaments with just the manager's hope that, you know, I can get these players to play the best. And those players for Sweden knew how to play the team system.
You know, how can you expect an Italian who's never been to England, who's never worked in England in his life, and who comes from an infinitely superior footballing culture to ours, who doesn't, who like Sven-Göran Eriksson, who was also an Italian, almost an adopted Italian, who could not believe what scoundrels we are, we produce, and how many flaws they have.
And Gab's book?
You would honestly think they might take a bit of interest before they accept a job worth several million pounds a year. But they don't, and that's why employing foreign managers is absolute nonsense and inherently designed for failure. It puts off the day when the kind of development Stuart's talking about is ever going to get started, which is further away than ever.
Oh, yeah. And the person that's got to sort it out is Trevor Brooke, and he's got to get the right people on board to make sure the development of players in this country, England have a vision and philosophy. They keep saying they've got a game plan now. I'm not sure I've read it, but I'm not sure what it quite is.
I can actually think of an Italian manager who came here and won the double in his first season. But, of course, it's not Fabio Capello. But it brings on to something else. I mean, you guys talked before about playing for the shirt. And, Hughesy, I want to get you in on this. Paul Robinson and Wes Brown announced their international retirements after being selected. You know, all these jokes on Twitter. You know, Michael Ricketts also announces international retirement. Ha, ha, ha. Is this a snub to Capello? Is this bad timing? Is this just stupid? I mean, couldn't they do this before? Or should Capello maybe have rung these guys up and said, hey, folks, you haven't been in the team for a long time. I'm going to call you up, rather than just taking it for granted that they would come?
Well, it's another PR disaster, that's what it really is. It makes England players look as if they don't want to put it in, and it won't go down well with the fans. But I think it's important to draw a distinction between the two cases. Wes Brown actually came down here to Watford for the team hotel last night, explained to Fabio Capello, I'm really sorry about this, I'm not fit, I need to want to concentrate on enjoying getting the best out of my club career. And if you look at the injuries he's had since he was a young boy, I think that's eminently sensible and understandable. Paul Robinson is slightly different. He basically doesn't want to be a third, fourth choice goalkeeper at any point over the last 10 months. He could have made that phone call, made that decision. He didn't. He waited to be called up to then say, actually, I'm not that bothered. I don't want to play. And so he's always waiting for the call up deliberately to sort of make a big fuss out of it. He didn't come down here. He just got on the phone, or probably his people got on the phone to Capello's people. I see things work nowadays. So it's a bit of a shame, but I can kind of understand why both players take the decision. I just think Wes Brown has it all a lot better.
Hughesy, do you think that Wes Brown got a call before he was named in the squad in the first place, and in between getting that call and last night had second thoughts? Or do you think he just was named without any consultation whatsoever?
I don't actually know, but I mean, given the way this regime works, it's very, very possible that he just got a call out of the blue. I mean, if you think back to the summer, Paul Scholes was given 12 hours to decide whether he wanted to go to the World Cup or not, which
I mean,
it seems like an extraordinary way to operate. I'm not as anti-Capello as you are, but I think there are certain big things that he got wrong in the summer. One of them is his sort of previously impeccable organisational skills.
Presumably, Capello or his one member of his not inconsiderable coterie rang Manchester United to check that Brown was fit before naming
the squad.
That's
what usually happens.
Would it not be normal to say and willing as well? Or I mean,
do you think Manchester United actually tell you if the players are fit or not? I mean, presumably you told them that Michael Carrick was not fit, and then, hey, presto, there he is.
Yeah, well, but Ferguson's acknowledged. I mean, heavens, no one's more sceptical about Ferguson than
I agree with Matt. There's two totally different scenarios here. Mm-hmm. Wes Brown thinks he wants to prolong his career. Robinson is throwing his toys out the pram. You know, and Robinson doesn't deserve to be the number one goalkeeper. You know, when he was the number one goalkeeper, he should never have been that. He made too many mistakes. He was unathletic and wasn't a top goalkeeper. So for him to announce his retirement now, I think just throwing his toys out the pram.
Yep. Hughesy, looking at the squad itself, a lot of new faces, guys like Jack Wilshere, Kieran Gibbs, Bobby Zamora finally up there, Carlton Cole, another shot. You want to pick out a couple guys who you think could really, really stake a claim?
Bobby Zamora is one of the most interesting ones. He's nearly 30 years old and never been anywhere near a full England squad before. Capello wanted to take him to the World Cup, but he had an Achilles problem, needed surgery. So I would see him as being ahead of both Darren Bent and Carlton Cole in the pecking order of becoming the new Emil Heskey, if you like, if anyone wants such a title, because Capello could have taken them both to South Africa and chose not to. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he gets on and if he can former good partnership with Rooney, because it's Emil Heskey, bit of a joke figure and disregarded by many England fans, and his retirement was hardly mourned a couple of weeks ago. But I think we shouldn't overlook what he did in the qualifying campaign, and without Heskey, England would have qualified as comfortably as they did.
He's called up two guys, two Arsenal guys, in Kieran Gibbs and Jack Wilshere, who presumably will not be starting regularly for their clubs. I mean, in Gibbs's case, he's got an outstanding player in front of him when fit.
Well, he's picked three Arsenal players that won't start the season, because if Theo Walcott starts the season, I'll be absolutely shocked, because his performances in pre-season games have been next to hopeless.
I forgot we had the president of the Theo Walcott fan club here.
I mean, Theo Walcott, if you looked at Jack Wilshere, Kieran Gibbs, Theo Walcott, who are the best footballers? Jack Wilshere by a million miles. He can be a top player. He's got awareness, he's got athleticism when he goes past people, he can pass the ball, he's got vision, he's got everything needed to be a world, and I'll go as far to say a world class player. He's got a bit of Lionel Messi in him, the way he drifts in field with his left foot, and he can see a pass. He's as clever as Cesc Fabregas. He can be a top player. Whether he's got the mentality, that's the only question mark against him. Whether he becomes frustrated at Arsenal, whether he becomes frustrated with the when he gets tackled, he likes to have a little bite back, and he can lose his way, and he'll stick his foot in and do a reckless challenge. But he's a very, very good footballer. Kieran Gibbs is a good footballer. Theo Walcott is an athlete. Who doesn't read the game at all.
So. You, funnily enough, talking about Theo Walcott, watching Chicharito yesterday, who's as quick.
Oh.
But the difference in terms of game intelligence. Massive.
I mean, he knew when
cheese.
To come short, he knew when to spin. I'm not sure Chicharito, when he's got his back to go, is a great player. But when he comes and spins and runs in behind, that's when he's excellent. And Theo Walcott can't see his runs. Mm. On most occasions, picks the wrong run.
Yeah.
Whereas Wilshere is a total footballer.
And Chicharito can use the ball, Wilshere.
Unfortunately, he's not English, though.
Isn't he?
Well, since we're digressing on Chicharito, the one thing which I think is curious, while he's got, he's guess 2 years older than Theo Walcott.
Yes, but less experienced.
He only has one season as a starter under his belt at club level, which I think I want to throw this to Husey. You know, a lot of times we talk about giving kids a chance. I wonder sometimes, are there some players who maybe would benefit from if their debuts as regulars at a club level came a little bit later rather than sort of at 17, 18, if maybe they sort of learned more by watching and coming on for short bursts rather than being thrown right into the fray?
Well, Jack Wilshere may have that this season in Arsenal, because that is a squad that's full of midfield players. Theo Walcott had a very stuttering start to his career, hasn't really kicked on in 3 or 4 years, unfortunately, other than that one amazing night in Zagreb. So I can see what you're saying, but we can't really have it both ways, and we are always after the Vegas. We have a unity player, we want to see them play, we want to see Jack Wilshere play for Arsenal, don't we? So we can't really sort of criticise them for picking them and then criticise them for not picking them.
Yeah, I wasn't criticizing. I was just suggesting. You know, you want to avoid situations like Micah Richards, who's a starter when he's 18, and now he's the last guy off the bench.
But I mean, Wilshere can play loads of Premier League football this season if he wants, by playing it for Bolton Wanderers.
I mean, he changed Bolton Wanderers' season last year. You know, they were going nowhere. Owen Cole came in, changed the style of play. It didn't work for the first 6 or 7 games. Then suddenly he got Jack Wilshere in there, and he started to run midfield games. And Pitt said he wasn't going to be strong enough.
Yeah.
If you're good enough, you're strong enough as well.
Yeah, and I mean, let him play there.
He wasn't kicked off the park in Premier League games, though.
No, but Paddy. He got so frustrated that, as you point out, that he's chipping back at people, and I mean that's the same. Mm. It's the same problem.
England fans, take heart. Jack Wilshere's here. I know you all love the quick hits feature last year because you all told me, but now we've made it even better. This is called Off the Fence. We want short, sharp answers, gentlemen. And if you hit the 30-second mark, I'll start ringing this very annoying bell. Joe Cole looked very good in his UEFA outing last week. He played just behind the center forward with Gerrard operating deeper. Paddy, is this the move that resurrects his career?
Yep, I think it's the right position for Joe Cole. His career doesn't wholly need resurrecting since he was playing pretty well for Chelsea before he got injured and had a pretty checkered last season. The other thing, of course, is Gerrard operating deeper. Is this a sign that Hodgson has spotted that he's lost his explosive pace? And maybe this is a good move for Gerrard too.
Stuart.
After a long pursuit by Barcelona, Cesc Fabregas is staying at Arsenal at least for another year. Matt, did you find the way Barca pursued the Arsenal midfielder distasteful?
Well, a little bit, but it was also quite entertaining and filled a few blank newspaper pages over what was a quiet summer, so you can't really complain too much. It's not really a surprise how they did business. They, in Spain, the clubs used the media far more shrewdly and sort of cynically, I suppose, than the English clubs, and there's a much closer relationship, and they basically tried to court him in public and unsettle him. It didn't really work, not because he didn't want to leave, but because basically Barcelona weren't prepared to pay the money. If they offered 80 million or 60 million that Real Madrid did for Ronaldo last year, I think he would be a Barcelona player now. But
Paddy, in the Championship, your boy Gordon Strachan signed half a dozen Old Firm alums at considerable expense, and yet Middlesbrough still lost 3-1 at home to Ipswich. Paddy, did your fellow Scott get it all wrong?
Well, on the day he did. But these are early days. I think from what I saw of that game, I did like the look of Ipswich under Roy Keane, and I would at this stage rather concentrate on that positive. But I mean, to go back to the point of your story, Old Firm alums, former Rangers and Celtic players I would not go buying in that league. They used to say there's Rangers and Celtic and nothing else. Now there's just nothing.
Matt?
United are supposed to be cutting their but player bonuses this season. Is this necessary? And Stuart, why do Premier League footballers need bonuses anyway?
Well, I think they should have lots of bonuses, but they shouldn't be paid so much. I think a lot of payments should be incentive-based. You know, I think there's a book called The Moneyball, I think the American football coach wrote, where you only get paid on when you're successful, and that needs to come into play somewhere in England at some point in the Premier League. I understand what you're saying. If you paid fortunes, then you don't need bonuses, but I think players should be paid less and be paid good bonuses when they do well.
Stuart.
QPR are reportedly considering giving Marlon King, who spent the last 9 months in prison for assaulting a woman, another chance. Matt, are you okay with this?
Well, I prefer it if football clubs weren't so desperate to give him employees like Marlon King, but equally we can't expect them to do the job of the judiciary. And he's obviously not a very nice man, but if you believe in rehabilitation, then I suppose he does deserve a second chance, and he shouldn't be treated more harshly because you're a footballer than if you worked in an office.
Paddy.
Right, Jose Mourinho says there is no way Rafa Benitez can do better than he did at Inter Milan. Gabs, is he right?
Well, he's basing this on the fact that Inter Milan is basically his team, and that, of course, he won the treble last year, and how could Rafa Benitez win more than the treble, even if he wins the World Club Championship? It doesn't really matter because it's only two games, and yada, yada, yada. I think what Rafa Benitez could come back to him and use the old Clough Revy line of saying, well, Jose, I can go and win it better by playing better football than some of the draws, albeit very effective draws, you served up last year. But don't hold your breath. Thanks to my guests today, Stuart Robson, Paddy Barkley, and Matt Hughes. Remember, you can keep in touch with all the latest football news at www.thetimes.co.uk, where you can also find out how to get our new iPhone app. You can also follow the Army of Times Writers on Twitter. I'm on there, and so is Oliver Kay at Oliver Kay Times. If you want to contact the show, email gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. I'll be back next week as the Premiership season gets underway.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.